and here I am. I'm an author. I've written many books. So it's just really interesting. I think you kind of know. I think there's something in you that you know that if somebody, even if they're saying, nah, don't do that. Mm. I don't know. There's some things in life you're just like, no, I'm going to do it. It's right. Mm. I'm going to make that. I know this is right. Like, I know it. And sometimes no one else can know that. So I know that's a bit conflicting, but I think that you can relate to that feeling of when you've done something or you've made a decision and you're like, I am so relieved. This is the right thing. And then you've also done that and you're like,
welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast. We're leading a healthcare revolution by showing natural health and fitness experts how to become community influencers so they can build profitable, predictable, and enjoyable practices. Each week, we share simple, easily actionable expert branding and heart-centered marketing strategies so you can flood your practice with high-quality patients, building a healthier and happier community. And now your hosts, Angus Pike and Tony Rose.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Your Practice podcast. Very excited because we just had an amazing chat with Nat Kringoudis. She's a Chinese med practitioner. She's a best-selling author. She's got online programs. She's a mentor for health practitioners. You name it, she's done it in the field of going from one to one to one to many. And that's what I wanted to chat with Nat about. So if you're someone who wants to take your message outside of the four walls, you think you've got a message that people want to hear about it worldwide, or maybe just a wider community, then you're going to really want to listen to this episode. It was awesome and just such a beautiful human being.
Nat shares her experience of, you know, what were the steps that she took that started to take her practice outside her four walls. She's got some great thoughts about focusing on kind of target audiences as well, and some really simple models. We complicate this world of, you know, trying to go one to many. So it's a hoot. She's great, and she shares really openly as well. So let's dive on in and listen to the amazing Nat.
Enjoy.
Well, Nat, a huge welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast. Thanks for joining us today. It's a busy time for you at the moment.
It is busy, but thank you for having me. I'll make the time. I was very honoured to be asked.
It's great. Now, you two were telling us beforehand, you've just released a book, which we'll talk about.
Sure.
And it's sold out already.
It's sold out on Booktopia already, which is, you know, obviously our leading sales distribution channel when it comes to books. So that's really exciting. And now everyone just needs to buy it in bookstores and it can sell out there too.
Right. Well, hopefully after today we can kind of help a little bit of that going on.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
We want to chat with you about how did all of this come about? So, you know, you have an impact and a network of people that you're helping around the world, and so many of the practitioners that we're that are listening today want to take the message from one to one to one to many. So how'd you get here? A little bit of background story for people who
My background's Chinese medicine, so I studied I went to uni for a really long time. I just kept going. I was like, if I stop, then it's done. Don't stop, keep going. So I've got several degrees, but my bread and butter is Chinese medicine. And I guess when I started practicing, it was, you just treated anyone and everything. No one had a specialist area. No one worked for anybody else. Yeah. That didn't happen 15 years ago, and really had to do the hard yards, I guess, as we all do in a different way, but it was just a different time. And I was inundated with women who needed help with their hormones, but I didn't really feel equipped to treat them based on what I'd learnt. And also the conditions I was seeing weren't anything like I'd learnt. And I think it's just modern-day illnesses that we were seeing translate due to our busy lifestyles that weren't something that was scientifically yet proven to be a problem, adrenal, you know, involvement, or even just, you know, estrogen dominance wasn't really a diagnosis as such, and still kind of isn't. But anyway, long story short is I resisted for a really long time treating these women, and then one day I was like, let's do this. And there wasn't really anyone doing that. So it grew really quickly just through word of mouth. I think this woman can fix your hormones. And I didn't really have any idea what I was doing. We were winging it. So, you know, what it became was that I felt like, and I know we all do as practitioners, I felt like I was saying the same thing on repeat to every patient. And as you do that, it feels like the message gets watered down. By the time you get to your last patient for the day, you're thinking, oh gosh, they didn't really get a very good summary of that, because I feel like I've said this 17 times today. And that really motivated me, I guess, to start to, it was, everything's been an experiment, truthfully, but started to do small workshops. Small workshops grew to big workshops. Big workshops grew to classes and books. And it just, it's been a very organic, you know, process. And anything that hasn't been organic has never worked. So there's a lot of winging it. There really is.
Yeah, God. But I guess that started with that fundamental of going, who is it that I want to give this message to?
It wasn't even that. I didn't want to give it to the women, because hormonal women are hormonal women.
Ah.
No one wants to do that. And they're like, oh, my goodness. She's just, you know. But then obviously you start to get to results, and they come in and they say, my husband's like, I'm a new person. And you're like, oh, that's nice. So I did make a bold statement. I did not want to treat women's health. I said that from the get-go. I'm like, I don't want to do this. It's not my thing. I don't feel like it's fun. I wanted to do something that was fun. Like, let's treat gut health. Let's just, you know, let's stick to that. And 15 years ago, gut health wasn't what it was today. Mm-hmm. That was a new thing too. So eventually, sometimes it's surrendering to what's right in front of you.
Yeah.
It's smacking you in the face, and you're like, oh, I don't think I'm good enough. I don't think I'm able. And also accepting that we've still got a lot to learn. So it's been a continual learning process as well.
It's interesting because one of the things that Tony and I will talk about, we talk about the power of focusing on a niche group, niche, I don't know where we are in the world, but two. And we often say two things. Think about a group of people that you can help, that you have some skills to help too. But also think about a group of people that you really like to help, because you're going to fill your practice with these people. But you're an example of the opposite, because here was a group that you didn't, one, you certainly could help them, a bit unsure about where you're going there too, you didn't particularly want to help it, and then it's blossomed into this incredible career.
I guess what you can think about there, though, is that, and that we have not done a great job as, I think, complementary practitioners of going after what we want to get.
Yes.
It's this philosophy that, oh, I can't earn money. That wouldn't be okay. I don't know why,
yes.
But it's very much that, you know, 1990s mindset of a complementary healthcare professional.
Yes.
I think the difference with this is I could see that avatar patient.
Yes.
That patient that ticked all of the boxes of what I wanted to bring into the clinic.
Mm.
What I wasn't probably conscious of is the reason that they were coming, but everything else was being ticked. You know, corporate or professional, could afford to be there, that was educated, that I could help further. Mm. All of that was there.
Desperately seeking a solution.
Correct.
So there was.
So I guess in that sense, that's maybe why I continue to bring in that same type of patient. And when I say I resisted, it still didn't feel wrong to actually step into that.
Mm.
I think there's a difference between stepping into something and going, oh, my goodness, this is just so not my field, or stepping into it and going, this is scary, but it's also fun at the same time. And I'm up for the challenge. But still, it was still an experiment.
what were some of the hurdles that you had along the way of going from, okay, I'm going to start to teach some group stuff and some bigger classes and bigger, what were some of the hurdles that you had to deal with along the way of all of that happening?
It's interesting because at the time there wasn't much around. So I felt like it grew really quickly beyond what I probably had control over, and to be brutally honest, probably beyond what my ego had control over as well.
Yeah.
So that was a really big challenge, I think, was managing that. I mean, we're talking at least 10 years ago when I started to create more of an online presence, and just shy of 10 years, create more of that online presence, really seek a wider audience. And I probably didn't have the structure or the back end to support that. Whereas now I know that, you know, we kind of scaffold and we grow, we scaffold and we grow, that's sort of this, you can see the patterns that are forming. I didn't have any of that. And there were a core group of us that were kind of doing it together, and we were really riding that wave at the time. But I have to say, truthfully, when I look back and I check in, I do think that there was a moment in time where my ego totally got out of control. And what do you do with that? As well, I wasn't And I'm still not, you know, I've got 15 years experience under my belt, but there's practitioners out there with 40, yeah. 50, you know, that are very wise. And that for me was, yeah, it was interesting when one day I was like, you actually really need to check in with this. This is
what did that look like when your ego went out of control? Like, how did that show up?
Probably saying no to things, thinking that I didn't need to do that, that I was beyond that, or... Whereas I think now I can see that I just want to be able to help as many people as possible now. That really is part of what's on board for me. Mm. I guess it comes also now, like, it's easy for me to say because I have a following. There are people there no matter what. So it's really hard to know, I think, but just constantly checking back in with that and having also when there's not anyone else doing what you're doing, how do you have those conversations? How do you sit with someone? The entrepreneurial world is very lonely if you want it to be. Mm. And even now, I'll say things to either my parents or my partner and they'll just look at me blankly and I'll think, oh, you're not my person for this. Like, you'd actually, it's not your fault, but you just don't get it. So really creating people that I could do that with and bounce ideas off that totally got it, that fully knew that it's not my choice to necessarily... having to work through the Christmas and New Year period, but I made a choice that has put me in a position where if I don't, and there's a book launching, for example, that's just not going to go as well as it could, and I can get my downtime later. That's fine. So, yeah, I think that has been the hardest part. It at times can feel really lonely until you actually get the right people to support you in that.
So how did you go about choosing the right people? What were you looking for? Who were you looking for? And have you found them?
So I have had several business coaches over the years. And I think looking back, I don't think they actually helped me in business. They helped me more personally, which is still one and the same, right? You are your business at the end of the day. I did make some poor choices based on their advice. And that's not their fault. But when I reflected on that, one day... I'd gotten rid of a business coach and I hadn't had one for a couple of years. And one day I was thinking about all of that and I was like, you know what? I was investing in people that hadn't done what I want to do, that hadn't ever walked that road, that hadn't ever kicked the goals that I wanted to kick. And I was like, it doesn't really work. I need to go and find somebody that's done what I want to do. And so that's what led me to the people that I now invest my time and money, I guess, into to help me and support me in the way that I know that I need to be supported. But that really lacked for a period of time. There was also the realization that I, at the end of the day, it's up to me. It's my responsibility. You know, I lead a team. There's people that rely on me. We had some very big challenges in business over that time that we grew very quickly. And it would have been easy to blame other people for the mishaps that happened. But at the end of the day, it's my responsibility. Regardless of whether there's people doing things within the business that aren't okay or whatever that might be, it still came back to me. So I think that, again, having to learn that and be okay with that and accept that we muck up and we make mistakes all the time, that led me to where I am today. And I can't say I've got it all figured out, but I feel like at least it's a lot easier now. And you just, as you grow, you get to be able to learn things. And then when they show up again, you're like, hang on, I've been here before. Trust my gut. I've been here before. That doesn't feel good. That feels good. So it's constantly learning, isn't it? It's constantly reassessing. And I think when I got comfy with that, one day I just had this epiphany. I was like, I felt like I had to keep on reassessing what I was doing. I had to kind of regroup again and then look at what we were doing. And I kept thinking, when am I not going to have to do that anymore? When am I going to actually get this right? Like, I felt like I was failing because I was doing that. And then I had this epiphany that, hang on a minute, that's actually what's making all of this work. And the reassessment is so necessary. And the minute you think that you've arrived...
Yes.
Usually that's when the disaster's about to happen, because it's constant reassessment and readjustment to keep you moving in the right direction.
I think that kind of struggle for a time when there's no struggle, it's a false world. It doesn't exist. I think it's interesting because when you said a couple of moments ago, we talked about this idea that so many of us as chiropractors, naturopaths, you know, Chinese, we're little silos. We get into practice, we're by ourselves. there, you know, when you think of traditional healthcare practices, there might be multiple doctors all in together, whether it be in private practice. But we do isolate ourselves and we think we're the only ones that are having the problems. And it's not until we try and come together as a group and start to kind of share. We've got more access with things like podcasts and people listening to now and all those kind of things. So many of our listeners are experiencing some of the same challenges that you talked about. I'm having the same conversation over again and again. I got into this because I wanted to help people, and I know that I can help people now by going one to many. How would you suggest that someone starts that journey? They're wanting to build an online brand. They're wanting to build a presence that goes outside the four walls of their practice. Where do they start with that?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's going to be different for everybody. Mm. And one of the things that I've done in the last 18 months is step into mentoring other practitioners, because that's so fun. I find it so much fun. So I think in doing that, I've been able to recognise that, I mean, we're all at different phases and stages, and it definitely has to be this transition, this organic growth. You can't, I say to my mentees all the time, if you were to today go to having, you know, 0 to 100,000 people on a list and 100,000 social media followers, what would you do with that? You would not know what to do with that. It needs to be this gentle, organic growth. For it to be authentic, for it to actually work, it needs to be you. So I think we often look at what are other people doing and go, oh, well, I want to do that, when you might be the worst social media marketer on the planet. So it's about looking at that. But I think really starting, what I get my mentees to do is get very clear on who they're talking to, very clear on what they find fun and what they love to do, because that generally steers you in the right direction. The stuff that you don't like to do, you're generally not good at it. That's why you don't like doing it.
Yes.
So what is it that you love doing? And let that sort of guide you. One thing I'm really big also on is being really clear on who you are in this space, and trying to at least give people their title and their niche, like you said. I think that is extremely important. You don't have to stick with that forever, but really being able to be very specific on what that is allows you to be really clear. And then what is it that we can bring in to start to grow that if you haven't got much of a presence already? Is it just your social media and a landing page? And do we just start with that and let that organically grow? Perhaps you have a website, perhaps you have a social media presence. It's looking at ways that we can continue to grow that. Do you need to have some online resources? Do you need to create a program? You know, there's so many ways that we can do it, but it needs to be not effortless, but kind of a little bit easy. And when it's not, it's just not authentic. It doesn't work. And everything, I can say everything that we've done has definitely been, everything that's worked has definitely been that. Totally, like I said before, a complete experiment. When we started, my PA said to me one day, oh gosh, you're teaching people one-on-one how to understand their menstrual cycles. If you took this to a workshop, and we had the space at the clinic at the time, why don't we just put it into a workshop format, throw it up on a random Saturday and see how it goes? And we could seat 40 people, and it sold out in like one day. And I was like, oh, okay, well, there's a need for this. And we ended up doing that, I reckon, at least 10 of the same workshops over 10 weeks, until one day someone said to me, why don't we just film this? And then it's online and it becomes this masterclass that you can just watch in your own time. And I'm like, okay, that's brilliant. So we did that, and then we sold more of that. And then I was like, okay, this formula works for me. I can put people in a room, I can film it, and then I can sell it. And then what else can we do? We can then build a community. We put all these people into a community, a Facebook community or a forum. Then they start to solve each other's problems, and we start to reconnect and create this community. And I didn't know at the time that this model was going to be something that, I mean, we've replicated over and over and over again, but debunking ovulation, which is my first masterclass, is 6 years old.
Right.
It was organic. I didn't map any of that out. It just worked. And so then we replicated and we replicated and we kept on doing that. And we have now 4 different masterclasses, all based on that same model. And there were times where I would look at other people creating these elaborate, amazing online courses and programs, thinking, oh gosh, I feel so short. I fall so short with what I'm giving people. But the difference was that my audience were what I was providing for my audience is exactly what they needed. And if I had gone and created this elaborate masterclass, it might not have actually been for them. And someone else has already done it, so why reinvent the wheel? How can I then direct them over to somebody else and realize we can kind of pull all this information together and share it, and then all of a sudden create this circle of healthcare professionals that are all supporting each other. So it's there's this knock-on effect, but I would just really stress that people just need to stay authentic. Stay in your lane, be authentic. The minute you try and move outside of that, it's not there for the long game. It won't last. So tap into what you love doing, what do you find fun, and then start to get curious as to ways that you can then start to monetize that, whether it's a class or a podcast or whatever. You know, some people don't like talking. Some people, then therefore, how else could you do it? It'd be more maybe a written format. Would it be more like workbooks? And there's so many ways to start to put your information out there.
Love so much about that. What I love, and I want our listeners to take note, is you ran a workshop and it went great. You didn't go, "Oh, I've solved everyone's problems and here I go." It was, you did it 10 times.
Yeah.
So 10 times, you know, this is doing it over and over and over and over, making sure that A, you love to do it, and B, that it is a necessary and needed message before you then took the next step of organically.
And totally. And then what happens is it's just an automatic transition that the next thing or the next project just shows up. One day you'll be sitting there thinking, "Oh gosh, actually, this feels good," or whatever it might be. You know, everything we've done. I mean, I've had a period party podcast, which is my first podcast. We've got 130 episodes, let's say. I've been doing that podcast for at least 5 years. Before, no one was doing podcasts. And there's so many times we're like, "Let's just throw this in. This is silly. Why are we doing this?"
I just didn't feel like.
But we persevered, and now we're all doing podcasts. But the difference is that it's like a dinosaur. It's been there forever. It's not going anywhere. And it's just something else we've been able to then monetize as well from time to time. It's not always sponsored, but from time to time. Again, just organic, threw it up there one day and, you know, wanted to see where that led. And now we've got a phenomenal amount of downloads and we have a lot of fun doing it.
And your first workshop, did you charge for the workshop?
Yeah, we did. We charged... it's so funny because we've charged various amounts. And it's really interesting to try and work out what that is. But at the time of that first workshop, there wasn't anything going like it. So I actually think we started off quite low. I want to say we charged like $79 or something.
Yes.
But they got a whole heap of stuff. And I think eventually we went up to almost $200 because there was nothing. And then the market got saturated. Everybody started doing events. Like events were like, you know, take your pick on any given weekend. There were 5 different things that you could go to. And then that's actually when I stepped away from doing it. I was like, okay, this is not going to work for us anymore. I'm not going to be doing this for $20. It's not. No one's going to actually put value on that, you know. And it's hard for us, again, because there has been this long-term mentality that as healthcare professionals, we're there to help people but not get any remuneration for that other than the satisfaction of helping somebody. And that's not sustainable. You've got to put food on the table, you know. So it's okay, I think, to be aligned with what you want to achieve out of it and to actually be able to pay your bills is okay.
Damn right. And if the end result of what you're doing is actually helping people. It's one of the challenges of being in a socialistic healthcare, because certainly here in Australia, healthcare is kind of free. You know, you break your arm, you can head down to an emergency centre, they'll stick you back together again and you walk out without paying anything for it. But here we are in a different role where we're not covered by, and I don't think that, well, I wouldn't want to be covered because there's a level of responsibility there too. I think one of the great things, there are times Tony and I put together courses that take weeks and sometimes months to put together, but here was a thing of great speed of implementation. You got to test the market, see if the market was interested, you know, multiple times through. And as you were testing, you were yet charging for it at the same time. So it wasn't just a free workshop as well. And then that kind of grew, you get to know more. It's a great...
It was always my aim to cover the cost of producing the class, the course, the masterclass we call them now. We've changed the names from e-courses to masterclasses. Just because everything is saturated as well.
Yes.
E-books, no one puts a value on. An e-course, I feel like they put in the same category. It's like, this should be free.
Yes.
Like, well, hang on. So I always aimed to cover production, whatever the cost was. And what I also worked out was that I'd announced the event, and we've toured with the events as well. That's something else that we added to the mix, because there were people that loved, I think, the one-on-one with, the power for me and my audience is a Q&A. If you can ask me questions, I can give you answers, and everybody learns something, and that works really well. So having a topic and the theme, I think, is really important. Sitting there and talking about it, but for me, the Q&A is where people really learn something.
Mm, great.
And so what we did, the model actually eventually became, we would do a big Melbourne event, we would film it, we would charge for that. We would then take it on tour, and then once the tour was over, release the masterclass. So everybody that had already seen it would either buy it, we'd give it to them as a discounted price if they'd attended, but they'd also suggest to their friends, oh, you know what, I saw this, you need to get that. Guess what, the masterclass is coming out, you can tap into it as well. And that created some scarcity, but then also urgency once it did come out. So, and I got to connect with my community. So we did that several times. I think we've toured four times. The time before last, I did the same tour, and I was like, ooh, it's not as strong. We were going to the same places that we'd been to. We weren't selling as many tickets, and it was just because the market saturated. And then we were going to the capital cities, which we'd always been to. And so, again, via experiment, I got asked to go and speak at an event in Bendigo. And so we went, and it was actually so amazing. We got media, we got TV, we got newspaper, we got all of this attention. And we came back to Melbourne that day, and I said, you know what? We need to do a rural tour. We need to go where no one's going. Mm. This is how we get the coverage. We get, because that's all marketing at the end of the day, whether it's local or otherwise. And the last tour we did was out of this world crazy. We went to Karratha. So what I did was I put it out there on socials and I said, all right, I want to come to you. Who wants us? Who wants to host us? So there was there was still a lot of effort on our part, but I didn't have to worry about finding a venue. A lot of the marketing was done through the people that had said, yep, we want you here.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden their community were getting together to put the event on, and we were literally rocking up, speaking and leaving. It was amazing. Because the effort was shared and that whole responsibility wasn't on my team. Plus, the community knows what the community wants. So that worked really well. We were going to places. Karratha, for example, was hilarious. We were still selling tickets as we were starting, and I don't normally do that. I cut tickets off at a certain point. But we had this amazing hall that they'd organised. It was hilarious. It was excellent. But I could go back to Karratha and I think we'd double the amount of people we had just because it was so incredibly special. So again, it was an experiment. We just tried it on. It worked. And we'll do the same thing with this new book. We'll tour, but we won't tour capital cities. We'll do the areas that just don't get that access.
Love it.
The other thing that's forever Tanya and I are encouraging people, because people think they're starting an online business and really it's a hobby. It doesn't become a business until someone pays you a dollar. And I'm building this audience, but for what sake? And we've done it. We've been guilty of it as well. To go, hang on, why are we doing this? I don't need that much attention just for the sake of attention if I want to help people there.
Absolutely.
Which is another great thing that, you know, straight away, that it was such a lovely organic start. It was monetized. It was a business there too. And whether it was luck or divine intervention, you found a topic that was hot straight away. And then when it stopped, and that's, can you talk a little bit of that too? Is that when somebody's trying to find, you know, because there are different areas, like, you know, what's next for you? How do I find something that the community is searching for? How do you stay a step ahead?
I think always listening to what people are asking for. You know, I mentioned just before that I started mentoring around 18 months ago, and that's something I resisted for equipped to do that. I was like, what can I teach these people? I don't know what they want. But I remember my mentor, I heard her say one day and it resonated, if you're not mentoring and you're not helping other people, then you're missing out on a big part of what we're, you know, our responsibility as well as professionals who have had experience. So in doing that, I've been able to really, I guess, recognize again what works, what doesn't. But the reason I'm saying this is, I say to these girls, you can put a social media post up and only get, you know, we can get totally disheartened by the amount of people that see it. But you've got to trust that those 14 people that saw it were the exact 14 people that needed to see it. That you're actually, those 14 people could be game changers because they're totally on board with what you're talking about. So I think it can get disheartening, but I think we've got to be constantly coming back to looking, what are people asking us for, to be able to have our finger on the pulse, and then trusting that what we're putting out there is actually exactly what it needs to be. And if it doesn't work, we'll also pull it back. You don't need to keep on flogging a dead horse. If it's not working, don't worry about it.
How long would you test something for? You know, is there a time frame of, you know, because if I'm that incredibly stoic, all right, I'm going to stick it. I've just listened to Nat. She's been doing it, you know, 10 years, 5 years, you know, 100 plus episodes. I just got to hang in there. What kind of signposts have you used to go, okay, now it's time to pivot into something new? Or what advice do you give you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, everything that's working is still working. I haven't pulled anything that's working. But, for example, we tried to put together some, not workshops, like retreats is the word I'm looking for, last year, and it just didn't work. I was like, pull it, get rid of it. There's nobody buying it. Like, I'm not going to keep on. So it was pretty quick. If I know, I guess we've had enough experience to know how quickly things can work. And I think that's part of it as well, is I guess it comes with doing it a few times to see. The problem is you can't know how it's going to work until you actually put it out there. And if it's not moving in the direction that is feeling good, then I think that's a good sign that you should probably, you know, or get rid of it, or pull up on it, or look at a different way of repackaging whatever it is that you're doing. There's many ways to do something. But again, I think if it's authentic, and I think if you're putting your heart and soul into it, it tends to work much better than if you're copying somebody else's model. And that can be confronting to hear, because you're like, yeah, but I want to do what you're doing. Like, yeah, but it probably won't work for you. And I don't know why it worked for us, other than that it was mine and I put my heart and soul into it. So, again, I think coming back to that authenticity, but if it doesn't feel good, that's a good time to pull out, I think. If you're not, if you're still having fun and you're still enjoying what you're doing, then I think it is a hobby to begin with. And that's just, if we just see it as that, then that's great. And you know, I think that it's a tricky one to be able to say, oh, you should stop at this time. Then you've had enough there. I don't know how to answer that, but I
so
think
so much of you is feeling. Like I hear you go, feel, and which is I can't think of a time that, you know, I have listened to my gut and it's head steered me down the wrong. Which the challenge of that too is you would think I would now listen to my gut every time, but it's that.
But it's so true. But if you've mucked up enough times when you haven't listened, it's almost like there is no other option but to listen now. You know, again, like I said, we all have massive challenges in business, and nobody sees those really, unless you know, you're confiding in somebody. But I've been very honest. I've put it out there many times. We had a situation where we had a staff member that took a lot of money from the practice, and I couldn't know at the time that was actually going to be the best thing that ever happened. It felt like the worst thing that ever happened. But I think being transparent in sharing some of these challenges is so important for us to be able to you know, we're all in this together, we're all doing it. And I think this is also where it becomes really important to have your core people that you are bouncing ideas off, that understand you, that can see what you can't see, and can turn around and say, oh, I guess that's the worst idea. And then you're either going to do one of two things. You're going to be like, nah, sorry, I think this is excellent. Or actually, I think you're right. I know that with this book, my mentor said to me, I can't see how this is going to work. And I was like, what? And she was like, I just can't see. I can't see it for you. I'm sorry. I just can't see how you're going to market this. I can't see how this is going to work. And every fiber of my being was like, you don't actually know what you're talking about right now. And so I was like, no, you're wrong. I actually know you're wrong. I can feel this is. And now she turns around and she'll say, you did it. I didn't think you were going to do it. But I just kept aligning to my vision. What was my vision with this? And it's happened to me many times in my life, but I tell the story of two standout times. In high school, I remember my English teacher saying to me, never become a writer because you are terrible at writing. And I remember thinking, you actually don't know what you're talking about. I read back through things I've written and think, oh, did I write that? That's awesome. I also studied music in high school. And I actually wanted to go to the VCA. I wanted to study music and become a professional musician. And my music teacher said to me, same thing, don't apply to the VCA, you're not good enough. And I believed her. I was like, you know what, I think you're right, actually, this is not, I'm not good at this, or I didn't feel like I was good at it. Now, what was interesting was at the time when we, you know, it's a different system now, but I actually received full marks for my music, 100 out of 100 for my my VCE score. And but silly, I didn't apply because I listened to her. I leaned into that and I believed that. But the English teacher, I was like, no, you know what you're talking about. Like, you're wrong. I'm right here. And here I am. I'm an author. I've written many books. So it's just really interesting. I think you kind of know. I think there's something in you that you know that if somebody, even if they're saying, nah, don't do that. I don't know. There's some things in life you're just like, nah, I'm going to do it. It's right. I'm going to make that. I know this is right. Like, I know it. And sometimes no one else can know that. So I know that's a bit conflicting, but I think that you can relate to that feeling of when you've done something or you've made a decision and you're like, I am so relieved. This is the right thing. And then you've also done that and you're like, oh my goodness, I've made the wrong choice here. And you can feel it straight away. Immediately. I can anyway.
Yeah. And I think it's, as practitioners, we've got some super advantages in that we have a venue, we've got an audience already, you know, we've got an iPhone, we can shoot some videos. I mean, we can host a workshop in our practice with very little effort to give it a bit of testing, get some feedback. We've also got patients coming in every day asking questions. Make sure that you're listening to that.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So when you're saying, how do you find what that is? How do you know what you're doing? Well, initially I was just listening to patients saying, help me with my hormones. And then we were listening to patients, you know, then we drilled down on that. What were the specifics again? And the reason I keep bringing the mentoring up was because, again, that was something that I resisted, yet people kept asking for. And then now that I've stepped into it, I'm like, how have I not ever done this? This is so rewarding for me right now. This is exactly what I want to be doing. I love this, and I can see what they can't see. But also, I guess, now I've found my right mentor. So I think that that's part of it. And it's we laugh with my mentoring group now. We call it Hotel California. No one's leaving. Nobody's leaving. Like, everyone's like, well, I'm in again, yeah. Like, no one. You can't leave that. You can't. But I've found my people. And yeah. I think that's so important. Because once you do find that, and I do feel we lack this support in Australia. I feel like there's a core group of us that are starting to get that and want more of that, which is so exciting. But it is. It's definitely that we severely suffer from tall poppy syndrome. And, I mean, we all do it. And I even have mentees say, oh, you know, I'll share about one of the wins maybe that someone's had. And I'll have one of the girls ring up afterwards and say, oh, do you know what? It's so bad. But all I felt was really jealous that that's what she got. And why is nobody asking me? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because we all feel that from time to time. And it's having that community and that mentor to say, that's okay. You know, but how can that motivate you to now get what you want? Because if you were in her position, it probably wouldn't work because it's not your dream, it's her dream. Mm. So I think the community aspect of what we do, I think that's really important.
What Nat, when you're looking at the group of people your mentees are supporting for, and you said before that you see things that they don't see, what are some of the things that you are noticing that are, you know, getting in the way of them kind of reaching more people, having more impact, making more money, all those kind of things? What are the big things?
It's keeping it simple.
Yeah.
We think it has to be this elaborate fanfare. And when I really want, I get my mentees to drill it down. I'm like, this has to be simple. And I think sometimes we can't get out of our own way, or we can't see what we can't see. And when we're in it, it's very difficult. When it's another pair of eyes, I just love doing it. And you know, we come up with strategies that aren't complex.
Can you give us an example? Like, what's an example where someone's been way too complex and here's what it looks like simplified?
Yeah, I can. All right. So one of the girls, who you'll laugh because you'll resonate with this, is in the group and wants to help women become more fit. So this is her vision, is how can I help women become the fittest version of themselves? She is an avid CrossFitter. She loves what she does, but she's also a healthcare professional at the same time and doesn't really want to blend the two. Now, she's both of these people, so how can you not blend the two? Anyway, we get into the mentoring session, and it's a planning session. And we're sitting there and we're talking about what that is. And she says, I don't want to appeal to CrossFitters. And I'm like, okay. So we keep on going and, you know, I'm taking all of this on board and we're getting really bogged down in what does this look like and is it a program and how do we put it together? And we go through what the avatar, you know, client or patient or whatever it is, looks like. And we get to the end of it and I say to her, you're marketing to CrossFitters. And she's like, I don't want to. And I'm like, but that's who you, this is who we're talking to. And she was like, we're marketing to CrossFitters. And so it changed the whole way. But the thing is, the whole time she was resisting that because of her perception of what everybody else thinks CrossFitters are like. And I'm like, but they're not your people. The ones that think that, oh, CrossFitters are a cult or they're this or they're that. That's not who we're talking to. That's not even our audience. The audience are the CrossFitters that want to be able to get their first pull-up or whatever it might be, we're speaking to them. Mm. Let's keep it very simple. We're speaking to the CrossFitter that wants to get their first pull-up. And after that, everything was easy because we knew exactly who we were talking to. Mm. So I think it's being really specific on, but keeping it really simple and just looking towards, that's really niche, obviously, but it was just about simplifying everything and getting really clear on, hang on, this is my audience.
Yes.
And then everything else from there, you know, your expert title, who you are, who you talk to, how you talk, how you act, how you behave, everything you do becomes much more clear because you know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
So that's one example.
It's great. And I know who you're talking about.
sounds unfamiliar.
It was so funny though. In the end, it was like 3 hours and I was like, we're marketing to CrossFitters.
Mm-hmm. And it's gorgeous because the traction that she's been able to have from there on, okay, great, here's where it is, you know, has been amazing, you know, the content that she's been able to create and not just letting go with regards.
Totally, but it's about, part of that is letting go.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because, and we want to be everything to everybody.
Yeah.
And also, it can be really scary to go, but hang on, I'm cutting off this whole audience. I'm like, you never had that audience.
Yes.
They're not your people.
Yes.
So let's talk to the people who are your people,
yeah,
who are going to then talk to their people and then bring them in. And then all of a sudden you're creating this community.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to be everything to everybody. And nor would you want to be.
Yeah, and it's wanky because, you know, human psychology, you know, when we're talking to people about finding their audience too, is, you know, I'm going to make no decision.
Yeah.
Well, no decision is a decision. You need to talk to somebody, and that old thing, if you're trying to talk to everybody, you end up talking to nobody. And then the great thing is test drive it and see.
Absolutely.
Like,
and
it sucks, you hate it, doesn't work, those kind of things you can change, but as long as you make no decision.
But totally, and you can't know what's going to work. But I think also, you know, if you're testing it and there's not many people watching and it's not growing, well, you've only shown a certain amount of people anyway, so that's fine, it hasn't worked. Well, the flip side to that is it's going to work and you're going to grow and then you're off and running.
Yes.
But, you know, you can't often know until you put it out there. We joke, I had my website, you know, as we do, we revamp it as much as it needs to be revamped. And the last time we did a whole rebrand and refresh, we'd published the website and, you know, it's an expensive exercise for me because there's so many buttons and so many locked doors and carts and payments and my brain doesn't work like that. I just give it to the people to make it work, which is fabulous. But anyway, point is, there's this beautiful website and I was so happy with it. It looks gorgeous and it's all there. And one day I went to search something and I've jumped on the website and I'm like, where do I search? So I've contacted my developer. I'm like, where's the search bar? He's like, oh, there isn't one. And I'm like, oh, well, that's not ideal, really, is it? Because that's pretty much what people do when they land on my website is search for something that they need an answer for. And I couldn't help but laugh. I was never going to know that there was no search function until we put it out there and we tried to search something. You can't know always. It's never going to be perfect either. So, you know, make a decision and go with it. Just start. That's what I would be always saying because you can't know where the bits that don't work aren't going to be until you try it.
Where Angus and I are often laughing, you know, with great joy that who would have thought we'd be sitting here doing a podcast with you now, Nat, and but it was a decision that we made five, six, I don't know how long ago, years ago, and it is that beautiful snowball, and I just love that about your story. Tell me, you're loving the coaching, the mentoring. Is that something that's just going to grow? What's next for you?
It's a good question. I've really committed to 2019 to be nothing new, everything that we've already got there. I'm very good at, I'm a very quick starter. I create things all the time. And I need to just go, I've got everything I need for the next couple of years. And how do we nurture that and really make sure we're reaching a wider audience with that? So there's nothing new to add, but I will continue to do these the coaching and really, I guess my biggest aim, I've said that I want this book in the hands of 50,000 young women by 2020. So in schools is my specific goal. So I guess I'm focused on that. And then the US launch is the other thing that we're really focused on. So really, I've got a large part of my audience now is in the US, which I'm loving being able to branch out of Australia. It's fun. It's a challenge. And I think that's part of what I realised as well was that this sector of healthcare in Australia, of complementary healthcare and women's health, I've been doing long enough that I've got my people here, and it didn't scare me anymore. I didn't get nervous. If you ask me to come and do this, I'm not nervous. I'm very happy. I love to do it, but doing it over there in the US is a completely different ball game, and all of a sudden I've met my nerves again, which keeps me excited and motivated to do that. So there's more of that, I guess.
Absolutely, there'll be more of that. So let's have a look at, because you've produced this beautiful book, and it is beautiful in all aspects. A lot of information, it's thick. You've got it here now. It's in hard copy in my hands. What would you do differently next time?
Oh, my goodness, I would never sell my US rights. this is my fourth book. And my last book I did very well with. We had an amazing contract. It was straight on the back of Sarah Wilson's big... And I had the same... we shared a PA for a while. So what? There was a point in time where I said to her, what you just did with Sarah, we're going to now do with me.
Correct.
And I rode that wave. I'm very, very grateful for that. We did really well with that book. When it turns sour, it turns sour, and that sometimes happens, and that wasn't ideal in terms of just the contract with the publisher. And anyway, with this book, I did very much surrender and give a lot of it over, and I did sell my international rights. In hindsight, I could never know where I was going to be today when I signed this deal. So, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But that's been a really big challenge. And we do things really backward in Australia, which makes it really hard. We're doing things very, I'm going in doors that I don't think have ever been opened before in trying to get this out and get around that. So without going into too much detail, in hindsight, I would never sell my rights again. But at the time, I think that was probably the right decision. So we're just learning and winging it and really trying to get this, over there. Other than that...
That'll be a lesson for book number five.
Hey? It will be a lesson for book number five. But I probably didn't realise I had that audience.
Yeah.
So, a book like this takes nearly 2 years to put together. Years ago, I didn't probably... 25% of my audience now are in the US. I probably didn't have that at the time. So it made sense to sign my rights over to let someone else sell that for me. Because I made the choice to grow my US presence, now I've got the ability to actually... I could have sold it 100 times over myself, but I can't because I don't own it. So that's been a really big challenge. But we'll get there. I'm really confident we'll get there.
Ah, well on the way.
Now, if our listeners are interested in finding out more about your mentee group and stuff like that, how would they go
about just
that?
Email us. I don't put it out there. I snapshot advertise. Like, I'm like, right, guys, this current intake, I just wanted 10. I'm like, I just want 10 of you. Mm. I put it out there on Insta story, and I got... That's how we curated our 10.
Yeah.
So it's something that it's more word of mouth. So if someone hears and they'd like to do that, then just contact us and then we'll see if you're a fit. And, I'm not going to take anybody on that I can't take to the next level. That would be really silly.
Yeah.
So I'm really specific on who we take on and to make sure that I can do what they want to do. But in making that decision, people have said, I'm not sure that, are you the right person for me? And I'll come back to what I said at the beginning. Have I done what you want to do? Because if I have, then yes, I can take you there. But if you're not interested in, doing some of the things that we've done, then that might not be a right fit. So we have a form that we get people to fill in to make sure that it's a right fit.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so far we haven't had many that haven't been, but we still want to make sure that we're all working in this together.
It's a wonderful, I mean, firsthand, you know, I know people that are doing your course there too, and have chatted about it. It's the access they get to you, the one-on-one support they get with you. It's
and my mentor, when she found out what I was giving, she's like, "You're never doing this again." And I'm like, "Yeah, but it doesn't feel, it's not hard for me.
Mm.
I really enjoy it. Like I said, it's effortless. Mm. It actually is pretty much effortless. The model that I've created with my mentees is, there's the hard work's already been done, and we're just replicating that. They've got to do the work. I'm just supporting them in doing that. And like I said, it's completely rewarding. I'm loving it. So yeah, they just reach out to us via email off my website, just send an inquiry through. And
yeah, great. And then we'll have some details in the show notes there too. So final thoughts, you know, we've got, again, people from around the world listening to us now that, Tony and I love this idea of a community influencer, somebody that wants to step beyond their four walls and have a great impact, because we've got a healthcare system at the moment that just sucks across the board. It's not great at dealing with all the things that we spoke about, you know, many of these disorders that just weren't around a couple of decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Final parting thoughts to kind of help them have more impact in their communities?
I think we've got to keep on showing up and just really then leaning into what are we seeing every day, and how can we be really good at that. So, you know, if for me, pediatrics, oh my goodness, I can't think of anything I would at least rather do, and being okay with that. Mm. We don't have to be everything to everybody. Just be really good at the thing that you really like doing and just nail it. And I think what happens is also in doing that, you naturally just start to give more. And if you can give in different ways, so yes, okay, we give in clinical practice, we give treatment, that's one way. But if you're also giving information to either other practitioners or your patients or your online community, or how can you constantly be giving? Because what will then happen is you become the natural go-to expert in that field. You're building trust, you're supporting people, it all comes around. So I think the more that we can actually give, and continue to, then that actually puts us in a place where you become a trusted authority in that space. So I know we've spoken about monetizing things, and I know we've spoken about all sorts of, and it's all part of it. It's not just about money. It's not just about numbers or followers, or it's also about what can we be giving back to constantly, you know, continue to become that person, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, I'm going to encourage people to get a copy of Beautiful You by the beautiful Nat King Gudis. Where all good books are sold.
Yes.
Unless it's sold out, of course.
Unless but, yeah. It'll be back in no time. Yeah.
Get a great copy. And as we were talking before we went to air, a great gift.
Totally.
For teenage, 14
up. Yes, 14 and upwards. But the feedback that I have received is that they're like, stop marketing to teenagers, it's just for women. And I get that, but I really recognise that if we could fix it before it's broken and we start really educating young women, it's a very different landscape for the long-term health of women's health in general. So that's my aim.
I loved your quote at the top there. It's from one of our other favourites, past guests on here, the amazing Lola.
I know, she's a very good friend of mine.
And again, she's coming
in that same seat.
Authenticity.
Exactly. I mean, Lola and I talk about this a lot. And, you know, we've all been in the industry long enough to see those that weren't authentic are no longer here.
Yeah.
And so please just be yourself. Like, and you will, Lola and I were talking about this just 2 days ago. Actually, I think I said I was doing this and she was saying, you know, I love those guys and you're going to have fun. And but it was like, yeah, but those that are authentic, we're constant because we're here and we show up and we're not pretending to be something. It's impossible to pretend to be something for a long period of time.
Yeah. And I like that idea of just, you are enough.
Yes.
And there's an audience for everybody.
Yes.
There really is. Yes. There's an audience for everybody there too. Now, it's been a great pleasure. Mm. Tony and I have been very excited about chatting with you too. And
you're a rock star.
Oh, in good company, in company with other rock stars. But thank you so much for having me.
It's great.
Been great.
And safe travels with your journey over to the States too.
Yeah.
We hope you sell a gazillion books over there.
Yeah.
Knock it out of the park there too. And maybe we can get back together for a round two and find out what's coming on next
as
well. And I would certainly kind of encourage our audience to, if you're looking for somebody to, you know, if you've seen the results that Nat has and you're wanting some support with regards to that, as I said before, firsthand, I know of a couple of people who Nat is coaching, and it goes above and beyond. It's an extraordinary offer. So if you're wanting some help with that too, make sure you get to the show notes. We'll have some links of where you can get in contact with Nat awesome. And a team to kind of follow through that as well. So
thank you.
Thanks awesome. So much for sharing with us today, and we look forward to meeting up with you again soon.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.